Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Happy Tuesday, Cleveland. We have the NBA draft. The Cavs slotted it picking 29th overall. Can they actually get somebody that matters? You know we're going to talk about it. Brendan Sorsby, for the time being at the very least, not allowed to enter the NFL through the supplemental draft. And the Guardians are going to be in action trying to just wipe away bad juju after getting walked off yesterday by the White Sox. A lot to talk about, 4 hours to do it. It's Jake Volnick with the guys here on overtime from 7 to midnight tonight. We are 5 hours along. We'll have whoever the Cavs, if they pick, at 29th. We'll be ready for it. But we have Michael Bohm on the board as well. You heard him on the 2020s doing work behind the glass. Michael Markoch with us tonight. And just dive straight into what was the massive news of the day outside of the NFL, outside of Cleveland, which was the blockbuster trade that happened between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat in the wee hours of last night. And it was interesting. I mean, Miami picks up Giannis and Bobby Portis. So that was the combo deal that they got done. Miami got to pick up a little bit of the cap. Milwaukee gets to get rid of it as Milwaukee takes on the ransoms of Tyler Hero, Khloe Ware, Jaime Jaquez, 3 first-round picks, a pick swap, something along those. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous things getting sent around in the incomplete ordeal. It's what's happening with this trade right now. But it is a ridiculous ransom you're getting back. But obviously nobody's sitting here fearing the Milwaukee Bucks today. Obviously this is a pathway forward to build into the future. They are trying to reset their team. They get a couple of nice young players. But the bigger part of the deal is obviously Giannis now heading over to Miami. And it's what we were hoping for last night when we talked about this. I said I wanted Giannis to go to Miami because it seemed like the two options were, hey, it's going to be either he goes to Miami or he goes to Boston. And we know what my take was if he goes to Boston. I'm done with it. Cavs can just stop there. The Celtics are going to be absolutely undeniable. And Boston was in on it. I mean, the reports that are floating around there throughout the day today was the fact that Boston was willing to give up Jaylen Brown and I think 2 first-round picks in order to get Giannis, which is still a good ransom. But yeah, I mean, heck, if I'm Milwaukee, I'm also taking the Miami deal because what do I want to do with a 29-year-old going to be 30-year-old this season? That doesn't really help me in my future timeline where I'm trying to get things right. I'd rather take on a plethora of younger players that have high upside. I mean, all 3 of the guys that we named in that deal, Hero, Ware, I mean, Jaquez, fairly decent young players that I don't know that you're building around any of them. Like Tyler Hero's questionable, but you're certainly having a conversation about having them be a part of a young core that makes sense for Milwaukee. But I walk away from this not fearing Miami whatsoever. Like, this to me has almost no impact on the Cavs from the, I mean, just standstill point of it. Because, I mean, what does the belief in Miami actually become? Because I sit here and say, Miami enters into the certainly playoff conversation. Are they top probably, 6 team pretty comfortably inside of the East? I think that's fair. But do they really change the top end? Like, am I fearing what Miami is having built this season if I'm the Cavs? No, I really don't think I am. Giannis is a great player. Miami will be better. They will be a formidable contender. But they're not going to be the team that I sit here and fear. They're not going to be a team that I think can push you to the brink, that can beat you in a playoff series, that should, I should say, beat you in a playoff series, because you got pushed to the brink by the Raptors and the Pistons. So I don't know who I would be here to sit and tell you that, you know, a Giannis-led Miami Heat, if he's healthy, couldn't do something as well. But yeah, I mean, I kind of just sit back and think to myself, They're going to be an okay team. They're going to enter into the middle of the East type of mix when we talk about the playoffs. But that team's not going out and winning a title. But I sit here and say that Richard Jefferson was on ESPN today and had a much different approach to the way that he views the Miami Heat right now.
On the Miami side, I feel like they've given up so much. They did get a lot. But now just because you have a talented player, you have to structure the team. You have to now build an elite team around Giannis, and you've given away a ton of assets. Are they going to be elite next year? I think that they are a top four team, in my opinion, going into next year. If everyone's healthy, if they could do it. But they still have a lot of room that they have to fill out on the Miami side.
Like, that's the part that I get confused by, because we're sitting here talking about them being a top four team. In what way is that now a top four team that I have to look at and actually consider? I mean, the starting lineup is nowhere near scary right now. Davion Mitchell, Norman Powell, Andrew Wiggins, who I think has to opt into his or out of his contract, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Bam Adebayo. And your bench is, about as gross as it gets. Like, we're talking about Drew Smith, Pelé Larson, and Bobby Portis as your main guys off the bench. And, like, you have to start digging into your bag of, like, Nikola Jovic and Simone Fontecchio if you really want to start filling out the rest of the roster. I have no fear. Like, this is the equivalent, when I hear things like this from Richard Jefferson, of the exact same way that I felt like so many people reacted off of the Orlando trade for Desmond Bane. Everybody's like, oh my God, Orlando, a top four team in the East easily, now that they have Desmond Bane. I sat here on the air and looked around and was like, am I missing something? Like, is there something that I'm not understanding right now? Because Orlando's entire problem was the fact that they didn't have a reliable offensive guard. And Desmond Bane helped the idea that, yes, he's a scorer, but he still don't have anybody to handle the rock. He still can't really create for himself. I'm not scared of Orlando. And lo and behold, there really wasn't that much of a reason to fear Orlando in the Eastern Conference. Kind of the exact same scenario. Like, that might be one of the scariest front courts built in the NBA today between Bam and Giannis. Everybody else on the roster is like, what are they actually getting done? Your best three-point shooter is either Norman Powell or Davion Mitchell. Your starting point guard is Davion Mitchell. Like, I'm just not afraid of that. There's no part of me that looks around at that team. I go, wow, you got to watch out for them. They're going to be so scary. Like, no. Their entire offense basically has to rotate through two bigs, which, if we have learned anything in the modern NBA, that doesn't work. Yeah, take a look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Two bigs playing alongside of each other is one of the main portions of your team, which, by the way, much more well-built, I mean, at least starting five for the Cavs and the Heat, and we still look at it and go, yeah, that probably doesn't work. Like, Evan playing alongside Jarrett, we've gotten closer to it actually making sense, but I'm still not convinced that that makes all the sense in the world. And then you combo with the guards you have, and it really doesn't start to make a ton of sense. And they have something that we don't right now, which is a semi-reliable wing in Andrew Wiggins, but, again, I'm still turning around and viewing this as, that's still not that strong of a lineup. Like, they don't compete with the Knicks. They don't compete currently with the Celtics. They don't compete with the Cavs. I mean, there's probably maybe two or three more teams I could rattle off that maybe they enter in that range, but it is. It's the Orlando range. It's the Detroit range. It's like, yeah, they might be a good regular season team. They might surprise in the standings like Detroit did. But by the time you get to the playoffs, I don't think anybody is all that terrified of them. They're a fine team. Giannis is a great player. But the reality is it this being the move, Giannis going to the Heat was the best thing that could have happened in this entire saga outside of Giannis going to the West. If he is going to stay in the East, which, by the way, I have no clue how we get here in the NBA. It feels like in every other league, if you're in baseball, you're going to trade away a star player, you're sending him to the NL. If you're in football, if you have a great player on the AFC, just like the Browns did with Myles Garrett, you're sending him to the NFC. I don't want to play him, certainly twice a year. I don't want to have to face him in the playoffs if I get there. I'm sending you to the other side of the league where I only really have to worry about you if I get to a Super Bowl. And the odds of that actually panning out when I'm trading that good of a player, incredibly low. Incredibly low that I have to deal with that. But the NBA is just like, oh, we have a great player. Yeah, we'll send him right across the way. Like Atlanta, who is, I mean, legitimately a playoff team every single year, was like, oh, we don't like Trae Young. Why not just send him to Washington? Like, so many of that, the inner workings of NBA trades going down that way make absolutely no sense to me. But sure, he stays in the East again. This is almost best case scenario outside of sending him to, I mean, the Serbia of the East right now, which I don't even know who that technically would line up. Probably like Brooklyn, if you wanted to send him over there, have fun. But there's just nothing that's going to make me reconsider the way that I'm building my team, reconsider what I have to do to go through the East. This is the equivalent of the Bucks playing in the East. Like, all you did was take the Miami Heat and turn them into the Milwaukee Bucks. Congratulations. Might be a playoff team. Again, if Giannis is healthy, probably have a good shot to be a playoff team. But once they get there, there's nothing to be worried about. The only way that I see this impacting the Cavs right now is I think it tells you a little something about maybe what Evan Mobley could be worth in a trade package. Right? Like, I mean, part of the conversation was, hey, if you want Giannis, if you're the Cavs, Evan Mobley is a starter. There's probably some draft capital thrown on top. Obviously, we know that Giannis is more valued than Evan Mobley around the league, but this sets a baseline of, okay, if that's what Giannis is going for, I can start to work with this and scale that back a little bit. What could Evan actually be worth to this team? I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that it was semi-intriguing to look at this and go, all right, well, I mean, listen, I don't think you're getting that type of haul, but is there a Tyler Hero type of player, somebody that meshes pretty well into the offense that would be semi-interesting? Sure. Like, I start the conversation in my head. I start thinking about it. It's interesting enough to me, but I still don't believe that the Cavs are in a business to move Evan Mobley. I still am not bought into this idea that if that's going to be even a fair baseline to go off of, because I don't know what Evan is worth considering the fact that the offensive game is better. It's still not great. And clearly the numbers haven't backed up the way that a Giannis numbers have backed up being an MVP. So you're still banking on a lot of low side. There is still going to be a significant reduction in value between a Giannis trade and whatever a trade for Evan Mobley would look like. So again, I still don't find myself getting excited, thinking this impacts the Cavs all that much. This is just kind of one of those moves. It's actually really equivalent to a move like Trae Young going to the Wizards, where I just take a step back from it and I go, team at the bottom got better, but they didn't really ascend to where the point where I think I have to worry about them. 216-474-0092. Does Giannis joining the Heat change anything for the Cavs whatsoever? Plus, you can get to us on X at Volnick Jake, VULINEC. Jake's going to our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Plenty of good stuff coming up for you guys tonight. We have the most pressing things said by our station's guest today coming at 7:40 with the station buzz. We talked about the Brendan Sorsby news right at the top of the show. Not allowed to enter the supplemental draft. So we're going to talk to Max Chadwick of Preferred Walk-On. He's going to break down whether that news surprised him, the next steps upcoming, and break down a little bit more on Sorsby coming up at 8. Get a Grip is coming your way, as it usually does, at 9 o'clock. We're going to have plenty of conversations surrounding not only the Cavs, but the Browns as well as the show goes on. It is a Tuesday, and it is a blind tier Tuesday. We get Michael and Michael in the mix in the 10 o'clock hour. Guardians reaction once they're wrapped up in Chicago, and maybe Cavs 29th overall pick reaction coming from round one. Right now, 216-474-0092. Does Giannis joining the Heat change anything for the Cavs whatsoever? And are you really excited about the NBA draft when you're drafting 29th? That's also coming up in 5 minutes. It's Overtime with Jake Volnick with you guys until 11 on The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. Asking you at 216-474-0092. Does Giannis joining the Heat actually change anything for the Cavs? And again, my pitch is that this does absolutely nothing. Right? If I'm looking at, yes, grand landscape of the NBA has absolutely changed. It is different. Giannis being in Miami is a much different feel. It obviously boasts Miami up the standings from, I believe, what was the 9 or 10 seed this year. I know that they had to play in the opening sort of round of the NBA play-in. But I don't think that the teams in the East.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Steve, we're looking at, you know, the Knicks, Boston. I mean, even throwing the Cavs, probably Detroit into that mix. I don't think that any of them are really looking around, viewing Miami as a threat, thinking, oh, I have to make a pivot, I have to make a change to keep up with the moves that are happening in the East right now. It's just not something you have to do. Like, yes, great, Miami got better, Milwaukee got worse. The East just basically stays the same. I don't see it as any different, but I want to hear what you guys have to say. Again, 216-474-0092. Let's go out to the phones. Alfonso's in New York. What's going on, Alfonso?
You know, not too much, Jake. How are you doing tonight, man?
We're doing all right, man. What do you got?
So I don't really, you know, I fell asleep last night, probably about an hour or so before the Giannis trade happened, and I woke up. I woke up and I said to myself, I don't really care because it doesn't really affect me, it doesn't really affect me because I knew this was going to happen. I wasn't shocked. He wanted to go to the Heat for some odd reason. I don't know why, but Kendrick Perkins said something today on First Take that was kind of crazy to me, but I don't know. But I didn't totally disagree. He said that Giannis won't ever win a championship with him being the number one guy. I kind of disagree with him because I think that he can win a championship being the number one guy, but I also kind of don't blame him for saying that because Giannis hasn't stayed healthy in three seasons. If you want to look at his playoff track record, since winning the finals, they got second rounded by Boston. They got gentlemen swept by the Heat. They got gentlemen swept by the Heat and the Pacers twice. And they missed the playoffs, play-in games this year. And Giannis really has been wanting out of Milwaukee for three seasons. So if I'm a Cavs fan or a Knicks, And I'm a Knicks fan, obviously. I'm really saying to myself, we're good. The only team that really should be disappointed is Boston. But then again, I don't think that they were going to trade Jalen Brown to the Bucks. But if I'm the Bucks, why would I trade Giannis to the Heat? Like you said, the NBA trades are weird because remember the Mavericks traded Luka to the Lakers.
Right.
And then you have to remember, like the Nets, the only team I really remember that really was smart about trading is the Nets traded for James Harden that went from the Rockets to the Nets, and they traded Kyrie that went from the Nets to the Mavericks. And then they traded Kevin Durant to the Suns for Mikal Bridges in 23. Those are the only teams I can really remember. And another team that traded for the East to the rivals, remember the Cavs did in 2017 with Kyrie Irving. They traded him to the Celtics.
Yeah, so, that didn't really blow up in their face too bad, but it was all right.
I really don't know why teams would do that. It's really confusing, but that's how I feel about the Giannis thing. When will you be talking about the Sorsby match? Because I heard a lot of dumb things from that today as well. Just want to let you know about that.
Yeah, Alfonso, we'll be talking about it coming up here at 8 o'clock, and I appreciate the call. We're going to be talking about the Sorsby stuff coming up here. Max Chadwick going to be joining us at 8. We'll talk about it with him and pretty much the whole 8 o'clock hour. We'll break down everything that's been going on there. But I think this is kind of the sentiment shared across the top of the East. Again, if you go to Boston, I think it's a different feel. I think, like, hey, the Cavs are feeling the pressure there. The Pistons are feeling the pressure there. Even York, to a certain extent. Like, yes, you just won an NBA Finals. There is also a task of, you know, holding up if Boston's able to stay healthy. If, you know, Giannis himself is able to stay healthy and he's playing there. Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about contention in a team at the top of the East getting better. It's just not what you have. Right, we're going to talk about more of this later on in the show, because obviously this leaves Jaylen Brown in a really interesting position. But the NBA draft kicks off here at 8 o'clock, and I need to know, I need the gauge from the Cavs, because I'm talking to people around here, and I don't feel a sense of excitement For what the Cavs have on the table right now, which is the 29th overall pick. We are sitting waiting for the NBA draft to kick off at 8. And most of what I'm hearing is either people not even tuning in for the NBA draft. Oh, I'm going to watch it on social media. Or, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Michael, you don't even think they're going to be making this pick, correct?
No, I don't. I think they're going to trade it for multiple seconds in order to salary dump certain contracts and get under the apron.
Which, by the way, wouldn't be all that surprising. So I think this is the thing. Like, if you go down Michael's route, if this team's not even making the 29th overall pick, obviously tonight is not a reason to be, I mean, it's not a reason to sit there and, you know, be dialed into the NBA draft and be so invested at what happens on 29. Like, that's not going to drum up your intrigue. That's not going to get you overly excited. How could it? But at the exact same time, even if they're making the 29th overall pick, and we talked a bit about it a little bit yesterday, I don't even think I can get excited for the player that you're drafting at 29. Like, I'd love to. I really would. I'd like to be interested in have a high hopes. But if we just go through and take a look, even at just Cavs drafts of guys relatively in that range, right? Like, if we talk about a 10-pick difference in that mix over the last, you know, a handful of years, we'll say 10 to 15, I still don't think there's all that much excitement that happens around it. Like, you go to last year, obviously this now we're talking about a 20-pick difference. Tyrese Proctor, I barely touched the floor this year. Jalen Tyson was a 20th overall pick. Yeah, he's a contributing player. We saw his role in the playoffs. It was basically reduced down to almost nothing under Kenny Atkinson. So, I mean, he's a nice player to have on your team. I don't dislike Jalen Tyson at all, but it's no reason for me to be like overly excited, amped up, think that Jalen Tyson is going to make a massive difference in what the Cavs are building on, you know, this upcoming year. A Jalen Tyson-like player is not going to have a massive impact on my playoff run. I mean, 10 picks, 2022, Khalifa Diop. Yeah, you don't have to even say anything because Khalifa Diop's nowhere to be found. I don't even think around the NBA at pick 39. Again, you just keep rolling down. Like, 2019, the 26th overall pick was Dylan Windler. Tell me what Dylan Windler had any impact in any sort of play-in, play-off type of series.
You could have gotten Keldon, though, couldn't you?
I think Keldon was in that mix. I think he was a couple of picks after. I want to say, I can't remember the exact type, but the exact number he was at. It'll be a quick search here. 29th overall, which is exactly where the Cavs are at. So, like, and to your credit, Bone, like, this is, there are players that come out of this that obviously are really good. Like, this is what keeps people intrigued, is that you do find players like Jalen Tyson, like a Keldon Johnson. Obviously, we have, like, the massive ones, you know, Jokic got taken over by a Taco Bell commercial or whatever it was. I think Rudy Gobert was well into the second round. Like, there are great players that stem from this. I'm not telling you not to be excited. I mean, but at the exact same time, like, I think if you take the odds of it, yeah, picking inside the top 30 in the NBA draft just usually doesn't lead to a lot of excitement. Right, like, most of the players that you take here, there are the few that, you know, I mean, come to fruition are great players. Even some of the players on this list that the Cavs have drafted, now they haven't been great for the Cavs, but they've obviously made NBA careers. Like, 2015, Tyus Jones was taken at 24th overall. Obviously, again, was not playing here. Allen Crabbe in 2013 was taken 31st overall by the Cavs. Obviously went to Portland. But, okay, so those are fine players. Again, those are impact-level players, guys who have gotten onto the floor, guys who get play time. But I still don't know. And maybe so much more of this is like a Cavs-related anger that stems from it, because I can look around the NBA and find guys in this range that make impacts. Like, my major thing was Ryan Kalkbrenner last year, right? We had Ken Brooklyn calling, I mean, probably 100 times talking about Ryan Kalkbrenner, and that's the guy they should go get, talking about the Cavs. Obviously did not have the opportunity. He was taken at the top of the second round. But he played. He had play time. He actually played, I mean, close to about 15 minutes a game in the two play-in games that the Hornets played this year. He served a role. And I'm watching guys get taken at that time, and I'm like, oh, you know, they can have an impact. They can play a role. But then I look around at the Cavs and what's left of it? Like, when is the last time we have had a player taken outside of the top, like, 10-ish range that has had an impact in the Cavs and their ability to actually win games? I mean, it's few and far between. Like, Joe Harris in 2014. Like, is that the extent that I go to? And Joe Harris basically did nothing as a Cav. Hey, there wasn't a ton to latch onto there. And you just have to keep going back and back and back. And you just still don't find guys, I mean, inside of the Cavs realm that got this done. And certainly now I'm looking at the guys that they've, I mean, yes, seldomly used draft picks on. Obviously, they haven't been drafting high. And even the guys they have drafted high recently, they haven't been able to play outside of Evan, Isaac, and Darius. But you just don't really see an impact. They don't get used. The Cavs get to playoff time. And while I watch every other team around the NBA be like, well, we have to utilize these young players on cheap contracts, get them playoff experience, get them development, let them go through some of their struggles. The Cavs pretty much take any young player they have when they get to the playoffs, and if they're not one of their starting five, it's like, yeah, we're kind of throwing you out the back door, right? We're forgetting about you. This is a place where veterans show up. This is a place where experience really does matter, despite the fact that we have countless accounts of just watching guys actually perform, even in a limited role. But that's the thing. I'm sitting here that, all right, let's just play with the idea the Cavs do draft at 29, which I think Michael might be onto something. I don't even know that they make a pick tonight. Let's say they do make their pick at 29. Do I really think that player, outside of maybe some of the regular season, has almost any impact on the Cavs season next year? It's hard for me to say yes, because I just haven't seen them actually take the steps to try and make it happen. You know, I mean, a lot of the players that you're getting at 29, even the guys that you get really excited for, even the guys who are likely going to be gone, right? Like, you can talk about Axel Lendenberg, you can talk about Bennett Sturts, you can talk about, I mean, players that are likely going to be gone. And still, I think if the Cavs end up drafting half of those players, it's like, I don't know that they even get a role. I don't even know that they play a legitimate impact when we get to playoff time. Like, am I supposed to be excited to watch a player play in the regular season? I mean, that's half of what we've had to be excited for the Cavs over the last 4 years. But it just feels like that's what we're hanging on to. That's what we're consistently sitting here and waiting for. And I'd like to be excited for something else. I'd like to have an actual belief that something is different and something changes. And I can latch on to a player they're going to draft, latch on to something they're going to make of actual significance this offseason. But I keep getting stuck in the same rut. This team's spinning their tires on the idea that what they have right now is close to good enough. And the reality of it is it's just not true. Like, the Cavs' biggest problem this year right now in this offseason, their main focus is how do we get under the second apron? It's a correct thought process. You have to be worried about getting onto the second apron, because we know the massive penalties that get, you know, put onto the Cavs if they live in that 2 years in a row, things that you cannot just afford to do. But this is a team that has, I mean, very little to show for it. You have one Eastern Conference Finals appearance, and it was in a series you got swept. And yet we still sit here. And that has to be the main focus of the offseason. It has to be, how about you reduce the roster? How do you make this team worse and still try to stay as competitive as you were? But on paper, you do get worse. And then make this entire thing work. It would be through the period of play young players. It's why this pick should matter. Like, we should be able to be excited about the 29th overall pick. This player should be somebody that we look at and go, you have to fill a specific role. You have to do something on the floor that nobody else on the roster is going to bring this season. And we're going to need you, you know, potentially, even if it is, you know, 10, 15 minutes a game come playoff time. But you're the only guy that's going to serve that role. That's the way the Cavs in great teams typically look to draft. It's not the way that the Cavs have looked to draft. It's not the way that they have implied it. So I have to sit here and, again, pretty much have the thought process that nothing is going to change. Hey, this is a pick that I cannot be overly excited for. 216-474-0092. Is the NBA draft even exciting to you when you have the Cavs drafting 29th overall? I find myself in a difficult spot to actually get amped up for it. I don't know. Like, we're going to be covering it tonight. I hope they make a pick. I hope it's somebody I can be excited for. I just don't see myself getting there. Again, 216-474-0092. But coming up here in 5 minutes, we're going to get to the most pressing thing said by our station's guest today. And we do it with the Station Buzz right here on The Fan. That is swirling after today's news. Again, the NFL blocking him from going to the supplemental draft because they say they're not holding a supplemental draft because that draft would be held solely for Brendan Sorsby. A lot of things we have to dig into on that we're going to with Max and Beyond in the 8 o'clock hour. But right now, let's go ahead and get to the most pressing thing said by our station's guest today. Let's do it with the Station Buzz. All right, let's kick things off. Guardians.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
About to get underway, and we start with James Fagan, Baseball America and Fangraphs, on with Afternoon Drive today, and he gave you his safe bet for who it is to win the AL Central right now.
They just kind of have this baseline of competency, I feel, of how much they can keep runs off the board that kind of keeps them in the mix every single year, and especially years where, you know, the division is down. They can get through injuries like that because they just have been so sustainable in keeping runs off the board and fashioning good pitching stats, from their, developmental ability, from how well they draft. It's something I kind of always count on them to be in the mix in some form. So when maybe guys, the teams that we were wrapped up in, like, oh, the Royals are going to make a leap with Bobby Witt, or, the Tigers have been, legit the next 2 years and we signed Framber, surely they should make a leap. When those teams don't really come to fruition or come as strong as you expected, but you always kind of think the Guardians are going to be around. So with those developments, yeah, I think that's kind of like the safe call is, like, this team pitches well every year, so that's going to keep them around.
And listen, like, the pitching has still been relatively solid. Obviously, we ripped on a vote as well as the bullpen yesterday for just having an implosion, giving up four runs inside of four innings. But I still don't know that I can even look at them as a safe pick right now. Like, I can't look at the Guardians and just be like, oh, they're going to be fine. They're going to be around. They're like, yeah, they're going to be in the mix. I still think, like, yeah, I probably agree with James. They are probably the safe pick to be the AL Central's top, but I don't know that you really have a safe pick in the AL Central right now. You're deciding somewhere between the White Sox and the Guardians, I think, pretty comfortably still. Obviously, you still have teams on the outside looking in. The Tigers are playing better baseball. The Twins are on a little bit of a hot streak. I just don't know that I love, like, even just counting out the Royals at this point being eight games back. Because it's so wide open, because the White Sox are a little unsustainable, because you look at the Guardians and with all the injuries, you don't know how much they can sustain right now. And I mean, what we've seen over the last, seven or so games has been that this team is not playing great baseball. They cannot hit well enough. When they do hit well enough, they can't pitch well enough. So I don't think there's a safe pick, and I don't feel comfortable with where the Guardians are at. And obviously, as somebody that we're going to talk about later on in the show when they're all wrapped up out in Chicago. But for the time being, let's head on over to the Giannis trade. Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, on with Baskin and Phelps today. And was not very happy with the way things were handled over in Milwaukee with Jimmy Haslam.
Anything is possible with that guy. And, like, why did they make it now as opposed to last year? Why did they make it now as opposed to at the trade deadline? In some ways, it's incompetence. Because he just doesn't have a great grasp on what he is doing or what he's trying to do. He is one of the most ill-equipped owners in sports history. He's one of the worst owners in the NFL, and now he's in the NBA trying to make these moves, and since he got there, Milwaukee has been a disaster. This is Giannis we're talking about, and there is no centerpiece of that Miami deal that went back to Milwaukee that you can build your franchise around. They waited too long to trade him. I probably would have taken the Boston package, but I don't make those decisions. Jimmy Haslam.
And I think there's something here to what Chris is talking about. I mean, obviously, it's looking at what the Browns have done over the last few years and then ripping on Jimmy Haslam is, I mean, low-hanging fruit, right? Like, you can obviously go and attack that. But I think in the NBA with this deal specifically, it's a lot easier to look back on and have a gripe with because it is the NBA. Like, there is no massive centerpiece. There is no great player that you got out of this. There is no guarantee for a great pick getting out of this right now if you're Milwaukee. We talked about Miami. They take a leap forward. You're not getting, I mean, fantastic draft capital coming out of this. Likely what is going to be outside of lottery picks. So you're pretty much stuck in this range of, we have to try and make something work. We have to try and make something actually play out, but we just have good young pieces around it, but no way to really go about getting these fantastic players that are going to flip around your franchise. And I think that's part of the issue we're looking at right now in the NBA, is that it is really difficult to get your franchise players. It is really difficult to go out and get somebody that flips it all the way around, but yeah, you might not even have that chance right now if you're Milwaukee. And the best player you walked away with was Tyler Hero, and don't get me wrong, he's a fine player, but he's not the type of player I'd be trying to build my entire team around, and you gave up Giannis for him. It's a weird deal. Like, I probably go against Chris. I still would have probably landed out with the Miami trade just because of the draft capital, but if I was Milwaukee, I wouldn't have been jumping to take either of the two deals, because the value I'm getting back for giving up a player like Giannis that is going to put teams in a conversation of, I mean, not of a championship, being much better. And if it was Boston, it would have, I mean, flung them into definitely favorites in the East. And again, you walked away with what we just pretty much value up is, oh, you got a couple of young, nice players and a few, I mean, maybe like mid-tier draft picks in the first round. I don't think that's good enough in today's NBA to actually push you over the hump to get you to be a great team. And that's the part where it's difficult. Like, that works in the NFL sometimes. You can, I mean, break off a great player for pieces and parts. You can do a Myles Garrett type of trade where you add a little bit of draft capital on top of a player like Jared Verse, and you go, oh, it might work because the picks that we're getting in return, getting a first-round pick back in the NFL, you can draft a really good player in the first round. You can draft a really good player in the second round with the 2028 pick the Browns got. You draft outside of the top 5 to 10 inside the NBA, and I mean, you're feeling pretty good if you get a solid role player out of drafting a guy, 14th, 15th overall. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. Again, I think some of the backlash is pretty well warranted. Staying on this, John Fanta, NBC Sports, also on with Afternoon Drive today, and he talked about the idea of trading for Jaylen Brown if you're the Cavs, potentially giving up a guy like Evan Mobley or maybe even Donovan.
Well, because of the way the pieces fit, I would say Donovan Mitchell. I would go guard for guard rather than Mobley for him. And, you know, if there was one takeaway that I had about the Cavs for the positive from everything that they did in the playoffs, it was that I felt like Evan Mobley really got off the mat and played some quality postseason basketball and did some things that made you say, all right, well, maybe it's not all over. You know, there's portions of me, too, with Mitchell, as talented as he is, as well-liked as he is, as much as I like Donovan quite a bit, they haven't been able to get to the promised land with him. You know, the one thing I would say is this. Jaylen Brown, his time as a Celtic is over. The Celtics are going to trade him.
Yeah, and it feels like that's going to be the case right now. We'll play some things later on in the show that back that up from Jaylen himself, but I mean, I think John's in a really interesting spot of the idea of trading Donovan over Evan, and I don't know that I absolutely hate it, but this is the type of move, a type of player that the Cavs realistically should be exploring and should be interested in. They're not going to get a ton of national buzz off the idea of going and getting Jaylen Brown because it doesn't seem like it makes a ton of sense to, I mean, take two teams who are about equal in the East and risk, hey, we give up Jaylen Brown and give you, I mean, we give you Jaylen and then we take one of your pieces back. Yeah, it might make us better. It might make you that much better. You might just ascend even higher. So I don't know that's a deal that ever gets done, and the national media is not going to look at it that way. But obviously, locally, it's a conversation. And I think, again, if I'm the Cavs or I'm Kobe Altman, I'm exploring every avenue to look at this and consider getting it done, because he is the type of player you're looking for. He is a two-way wing and a good on-ball defender, and a guy who can take over a lot of the scoring that you would be missing by giving up one of these players. I just don't think it's a thing that you can ignore. And I think the Cavs have to consider making a big move if they want to go for it. I'm on the record. If you want to blow it up, you want to rebuild around Evan Mobley, I get it. I understand it, especially the way that the anti-tanking new lottery rules are set up. You can make it work. You can have something fall into your favor. But if you're going to make it all out go for it, then you might as well make it all out go for it. Jaylen Brown should be a part of that conversation. All right, obviously, Brendan Sorsby news big today, and who better to talk about it than Albert Breer of the MMQB on with Afternoon Drive today, talking a little bit about Brendan Sorsby and the price that he thinks he's already paid.
I think their point is, and I agree with this to a degree, is that the kid has already paid a very, very heavy price. And, you know, like that price is his eligibility, his final year playing college football, which, you know, he wanted to play in his native state, the $6 million or so that he would have made this year. Now he's already collected some of that, so he didn't lose all of it. And then the chance to play his way into the top five of the draft next year, which would mean $50 million guaranteed, right? So you add all of that up, then whatever Jeffrey Kessler is billing him, you know what I mean? Which is, I mean, going to be a substantial amount of money. And like, I think that that's the Sorsby side. Is he's already paid a massive price for this, and now you as the NFL are preventing him from moving on with his life. Now, whether or not you buy into that, I think that's sort of the point they're trying to make. Like, I think it's hard to argue he hasn't already paid a pretty heavy price.
I mean, listen, there is obviously a price that has been paid for Brendan Sorsby, not having college eligibility, losing out on some NIL money. I don't know that I am. I'm kind of with Albert's, you know, counterpoint to himself there, which... I don't know I can buy into that. I don't know that you have really paid the price in this scenario of, well, you can't go back to college football and the public perception is bad. Like, again, I'm far from completely anti-Brendan Sorsby. I am on the record saying that I would put in as high as a third-round pick in a supplemental draft had he been allowed to, or maybe still be allowed to go out and explore it. I just don't know that I agree with the fact you paid the price. Like, the NFL probably would and should hand down a suspension when Brendan Sorsby eventually, I'm going to imagine, gets allowed to play NFL football. But you don't get to just walk around and gamble and break the rules and then go, oh, well, you paid the price because you got kicked out of college football for it. Like, no, for good reason. Like, that is the start of the process. And the NFL can't just turn around and allow that, oh, well, he paid the price. He can't go back to college football again. You can't act as a safe haven from college football players who decide to go against the grain of the NCAA and make it a problem. You have to hold some integrity to the game. You have to hold some things in a higher standards. I think to Albert's point in another point in this interview, this is also the NFL trying to protect their relationships with the major sports books that they have deals with. Right, you can't have sportsbooks making money if people are under the assumption that the players are making bets themselves. That puts them in jeopardy. That puts your relationship in jeopardy. I think it's a lot more of the NFL trying to defend that avenue of it. All right, that'll do it for the station buzz. When we come on back here in about 5 minutes, Max Chadwick, preferred walk-on, going to help us break down more on the Brendan Sorsby situation right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.